feature presentation.
This weird aberration society.
I don't like that Ryan guy.
Welcome back to Mutual Aberration Society. It's Ryan, as always. And today I have return guest one, the internationally known filmmaker.
Soon to be.
Darius, how do you say your last name? I don't want to
Cheeky.
Say it. Cheeky.
Ooh, yeah.
Darius Cheeky, the cheeky yeah. one. better known as DC from the Eight Plates podcast, is back. Last time we did an episode, it was a crossover double episode. And guess what? We're going to do the same thing again. The last time we talked about one filmmaker, a specific filmmaker by the name of Sean Baker. And this time we're going to be talking about my boy, the Greek freak, the original Greek freak before Giannis. Shout out to Giannis. One Yorgos Lanthimos, and we're going to be talking about his first, let's say, from 1995, right?
That's
up
right.
Up until 2017, his output. And then we will go to Eight Plates podcast on the second part of this Yorgos Lanthimos crossover episode and discuss the films from 2018 up until the present. So, definitely listen to that, because that'll have a lot of the bangers that are on probably the front of people's minds right now. But yeah, just to kick things off, Darius, what was your introduction to Yorgos?
So I first of all, thank you for having me. It's always a pleasure to be a two-time, twice in a row repeat guest. It's never happened before, because usually I get laughed off of shows. People are like, I hated this guest. Even movies. Movies never gets comments on Spotify. And the one guy was like, this guy, I can't stand this guy. Anyways, so I love that the MAS fellas at least tolerate a bit of this goofiness here. I will say my first movie that I saw of him was with my parents. Let me look at my notes here. I got all these notes over here. Yeah, it's The Killing of a Sacred Deer. Basically, I saw that as a 17-year-old with my parents, and just when it came out on like VOD, and we're like, yeah, that sounds like an interesting movie. Let's check it out. And it was very awkward, to say the least, especially those sex scenes. Yeah.
No, I got you beat. I got you beat. I seen the movie with my parents, and I took a girl. This is before I owned a car. I was in high school. Mm-hmm. And I used to see movies for free, because my father, for many years, he had like a cleaning contract with both local theaters in my hometown. So mm-hmm. I used to go with him and work on like during the summer, and like all the people there knew me. We'd go see movies for free all the time, whatever. So there was a girl I was dating. I'm not going to dox her, because, you know, who knows what she's doing right now.
Yeah.
Shout out to her. Again, I was probably like 16 ish, something like that. But we was like, let's go to the movies. And my parents were like, oh, you know, we can take you, you know? So she came through, and we went to see Cruel Intentions.
Okay.
With my parents in the damn theater too.
Interesting. It
was the most awkward fucking movie to watch with some chick at 16. Yeah. With your parents, considering like the amount of sex and shit, like, you know, like mm-hmm. had like Sarah Michelle Gellar and Selma Blair like making out with like lots of spit, and then like Ryan Philippe and homeboy, what's homeboy's name, Pacey from Dawson's Creek, Joshua Jackson, my cousin, not really not really my cousin, but but yeah, he played a gay character, a very Bret Easton Ellis kind of character.
Okay. I haven't seen the movie though, but I know that it's twisted.
Yeah, I don't know if you've seen Cruel Intentions or not, but very not appropriate, which is kind of on brand for our discussion, because I feel like Yorgos makes those kind of movies. Actually, that feels like that entire date would be a scene in a Yorgos Lanthimos movie.
Yeah. were you like four rows, like four seats in a row as well, or was it?
I think they sat in one row above a front of us, or
at least
behind us, or something like that. And then
so it didn't have to hear your dad being like,
shout out to my dad. I don't, he wouldn't, that's not his style. But,
no, of course.
But nah, He's more of the you know, the popcorn. No, I'm just playing the popcorn bucket.
The Dune bucket. Yeah.
I'm playing. But yeah. So Yorgos is a very interesting filmmaker for me for a lot of reasons. I think the first movie that I saw was, I'm trying to remember if it was either The Lobster or Killing of a Sacred Deer. It was The Lobster. The Lobster was the first one. And then I saw Killing of a Sacred Deer. Mm-hmm. And I pretty much the A24 marketing of The Lobster kind of won me over. And it was Colin Farrell. And, you know, I fucked with Colin Farrell because I liked him in Bruges a lot. You know, underrated movie, another underrated.
What when we'll get to it, I'll talk more, but yeah, definitely. I think that he's got this crazy filmography that spans the worst movies where he's great, like Alexander, and then some like True Detective Season 2, which everybody hates, but I kind of loved because it was enjoyable at the end. Anyway, so we'll get into it, but yeah, I do have a lot of respect.
It's funny because I was literally at this local coffee shop, the Kerouac Cafe, today, and I was getting some coffee, and I was. Two guys were talking and I couldn't help but butt in because they was talking about, one guy was talking about how he really liked True Detective Night Country, which I'm like, terrible taste. Why would you like that? You know, but I'm not going to say that, you know, I'm just a stranger. And then he was talking, the other guy who happened to work at the coffee shop was kind of telling him like, yeah, I really didn't like that. You know? And you know, I liked the first season cause I'm rewatching them. And he's like, and then the guy was shitting on the second season. Cause again, normie take. And then he was like, but you know, it's like they did a lot that tied in with the first season. I couldn't help it. I was like, you know, that like that new one was just like not even True Detective. It was a different show that HBO had them turn into True Detective. And he was like,
that's right.
Yeah, but they kind of like do that with all the seasons. And I was like, oh, okay. And I just walked away because, you know me, I could have been like, no, actually, that's wrong, dude. But I was like, you know what? Live in your truth, bro.
That's true.
You know what I'm saying? But yeah, on to Yorgos Lanthimos. You know me. MAS listeners know I'm a sidetrack guy. But yeah, so I first found out about Yorgos. He came on my radar with The Lobster. And it's weird. It's not till very recently that I really just kind of like, he's kind of like one of my favorite filmmakers working right now.
Interesting.
And it's not even, it wasn't always that way. It just kind of, what it is, and maybe this is just, you know, my own sort of weird narcissism or something, but like, I tend to like filmmakers or people who create things that kind of like, I feel like have a similar sensibility to myself. And what I mean by that is when I first started making shit, the type of shit that he makes was the kind of shit that like I was just making by default, like shit that I was like, well, it's a movie. So like, we don't have to abide by any rules. Like we don't have to, like, in terms of like the story logic, we can just make it whatever we want.
Exactly. But
when I took that approach, I kind of had that, like, at every step of the way, a lot of people would be like, well, let's make it logical. Let's make it coherent. Let's make it this, let's make it that. So once I started to like get paid to do stuff, I had to like fall in line and be more like structure oriented and more like, you know, has a coherent beginning, middle, end. But I was always like, the surrealism was always something that people weren't, you have to sell people on that, right?
Like, you do, yeah.
You have to sell people on this idea. Like, well, that doesn't happen in real life. And I'm like, yeah, that's the point.
And oftentimes you have to sell them by making a great movie first. It's not like you can explain away. So it's like someone like, the names come back again and again, David Lynch, et cetera. I don't want to be this Dinch fanboy, but basically what you do is you get this budget from somewhere and then you make these movies and you build a reputation where like, oh, people know this guy is able to complete a film and do something that's worthwhile. And then you get the freedom to do the return. Right. Obviously, hopefully you do that before you turn 70, Ryan. I hope that for you. But at the same time, it's, you know what I'm saying? It's like, you don't just get that right away. Yeah. And
Yeah. So I definitely, if my project that comes out in the very near future here is very strange, that's just because no one's telling me not to make it strange. I just did it myself, and that's why that's how you'll know. So Yorgos was kind of one of those guys who had been on my radar since the Lobster. And with every time I find myself watching one of his movies, it's just like, I just kind of understand that, like, I'm going to like his shit. Like, and I understand that, like, a lot of people aren't.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it's either like a love hate thing, and his, we'll get into sort of like, his critics and sort of like,
which is me, by the way, real quick, not to cut you off, but it's like last time you had Sean Baker, right, where I'm a fanboy of it, and you're like, okay, you tolerate it. I like this is the flip. exactly. Yeah. Well, I like him, but I do think that there's like two movies of his that I actually enjoyed. Mm-hmm. I respect all of them, and they're all well made, and they're all good. But two of them, I'd say, are actually I'd watch again.
Let's start then. Let's go with the earliest. We'll talk. We'll mention before we even go into like the shorts.
Yeah,
we're not going to be talking about My Best Friend. Yorgos himself doesn't consider it his first movie. You know, I know that because I've heard him say it. Like, he said his first movie is Kenyatta. And he directed this movie with Lakis Lazopoulos. I'm bad at Greek names.
Right. I mean, everybody is except Greeks, right? So
except Greek, right. I can't even say Giannis Antetokounmpo. Shout out to Giannis. I don't know. But yeah, we won't be talking about that, but I'm trying to go back through here and go to the earliest short, which is The Rape of Chloe, 1995.
Yeah, that's right.
A short film, I'm reading off of the synopsis here, a short film adapted from the ballet Danafis and Chloe, the pirates chasing Chloe. This is clearly like Greek to English translation.
Yeah.
The pirates chasing Chloe, the capture and rape, the Braxis, their leader, obliges to dance with him. The syringe comes free. comes to free her. Well, the syringe, I guess that's a character, forever. 10 minutes long. This is a lost short, apparently. So no comments. I don't even think it's got 44 reviews on Letterboxd. What?
Yeah, so they're all lying. That's what I'm talking about. It's like, first of all,
how did you see this?
That's what happened, is there's one person who wrote, right, but I forgot his or her name. Basically what they're saying is, no wonder that a cis male director talks about rape as his first movie. And then, well, this is great bait, by the way. I appreciate that person, because afterwards she had like 100 million comments be like, how dare you? I'm a cis male and I'm allowed to do the movies I want. You know, all the people were freaking out. And then of the other reviews are referring to the feud they had with that person. So it's just, they're all lying, basically. That's all.
Okay. Shout out to those liars. So 2002's, this is another one I want to see. It's a 14 minute short called Uranisco Disco, about a producer and director of erotic films and his mistress, a wannabe singer making a porn musical. I got to find this. Only 143 people have logged it as being saw. It's got 11 reviews. Again,
are they lying too?
I don't know. One of the reviews is, if anyone finds this, please email me at, I'm not even going to say this. This
awesome.
Email.
That's great.
So like, people are just logging in who haven't even seen it. I spent hours to find and watch a 15 minute long movie. One star. I will never give up. I will never give in. Please, if anyone finds a file. So most of these are just people that are asking for the movie.
Yeah.
So again, lost short. We don't know. Mm-hmm. It might be a banger. It might not be. that's from 2002. So we'll just go ahead and go to the first film, which is Kenyatta from 2005.
Yeah.
I will read the synopsis. It doesn't matter. At a Greek hotel in the off season, a chambermaid, a man obsessed with BMW cars, and a photo store clerk attempt to film and photograph various badly reenacted struggles between a man and a woman. Okay. I don't know what this movie is about 100%, but I loved it.
Yeah, me too.
You said you liked it a lot too. So let's get into it.
This is just like Lady Battle Cup that we did an episode on a million years ago. I couldn't find a, like, you showed me the version, but that was always too late because I had other things to do today. So basically I found a version that was subtitled in Turkish. I don't speak Turkish. So that's sort of, I got the full like blind experience, but I kind of loved it too. I love the vibes. Cinematography was very nice.
Well, I will say this. I watched it with the English subtitles. There's not a lot of dialogue anyways.
That's right.
But it doesn't help.
That's right.
I was still trying to piece together. I need to return to it. It's like I was still trying to piece together, like, exactly, like, what the fuck the guy was doing with those women. Like, you know, they say they're like Russian prostitutes or whatever, but then he's like finding these women, having them, having him get like passport photos or something.
Yeah. Yeah.
And like, that's the character who's the photographer, who's also filming this reenactment. It's not even at first I thought it was a movie, but it's not.
Mm-mm.
And then the girl who works at a hotel in the synopsis says she wants to be an actress, but she's participating in these reenactments. And then there's a dead woman that they see on the beach.
Yeah.
Taking pictures of.
So look, I think this is successful, but at the same time, like, cause it's enjoyable. We both kind of liked it, even though I understood none of it. And you understood a bit more than me, but still not that much. I think that's a pitfall that a lot of poor, like people, not poor as in not monetarily rich, but people who can't really make movies like they think they can. That's a pitfall you can definitely get caught up in, is that you want to do something weird and alternative in structure, but then sometimes it just turns out empty, you know. And this film, I'm not saying it is, but it's you have to make sure that you don't, you know what I'm saying? Like, some people just go too weird and they make nothing at the end.
Yeah.
So that's
what's
also
interesting about this is, like, well, there's a lot interesting about it, but
yeah.
This is like the first movie that he made, and it's equally as weird by being the most pedestrian.
That's right.
And that's kind of why I liked it. Well, I was like, this is weird, but like, it's like, there's nothing surreal really, other than like whatever these three characters that we're following, whatever their particular vices or obsessions are just like, so not what you typically see on camera. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's not something that, like, like, why is this a fixation of these characters? Like the movie opens and we see the character, the guy who's the photographer character guy.
Mm-hmm.
He's like walking down the highway and he comes across
with headphones on.
There's a car that's flipped over. He walks up, there's music playing. He doesn't even check that the person's alive or dead. That's probably clearly the person's dead. Reaches in the car, takes the tape out, puts it in his cassette, his Walkman, and then he's listening to the music, and that becomes like some of the it returns later when he takes the girl, the hotel, the girl who wants to be the actress, apparently the girl who's in these weird reenactment, which you couldn't read the dialogue in the Turkish version, but it's so funny because, like, when they're shooting those scenes, he's literally saying to them like what she's supposed to do. Like, he's like, the woman runs, the man gets up, he catches her, she kicks him, he throws him down, he picks her back up. She said, he's literally saying what. And then later on in the movie, when he's recording, you see the same, the guy who's driving the cars, the guy who's obsessed with the cars, according to the synopsis, he's talking into a hand recorder and he's saying that shit. Like, the woman is doing this, the woman is doing that. And when he has those different, we see him with like several different women, like three different women. He's like having them do similar things where he's like, well, now turn around, now put your hand behind your back. And I don't know what's going on. Like, I don't know. Even with subtitles, I have no idea what the purpose was. And then there's like a fashion show in the middle of it.
That was, I love that sequence.
And then the guy, the older guy who they see in the hotel room, who they got some of the clothes from. And then he's like, he asked him at the end of the fashion show, he asked the cameraman, who's our photographer guy, he asked him like, can I get the dub? He's like, well, yeah, when am I going to get it? He's like, how about Wednesday? He's like, let's do next Wednesday. And he's like, okay, fine.
Just like us, dude. That's exactly scheduling an MAS A-plates crossover.
It's pretty similar. Yeah, that's how this episode came together, kind of. but yeah, so I don't know what this movie's about. I don't even know how to recommend this movie to anyone, other than like people who like weird shit or people who are members of Yorgos Hive, like myself.
Exactly. It's a deep dive movie. You know what I'm saying? It's like,
it's
one of those things where you've
cut. It's definitely, it's not like most people haven't seen this movie. And that's probably for a reason, but I enjoyed it. DC enjoyed it. And yeah, I mean, it's hard for me to not recommend people who listen to the podcast, because to go check it out, because if you live by default, if you listen to this podcast, then you're listening to some weird shit. So you're into some weird shit. So yeah, MAS listeners, definitely check it out. Kenyatta.
You say it that way? It's Kenyatta, no?
Kenyatta. I don't know, because you know me, I say Kenyatta, but it's like, it's Greek. I don't know. I'm probably
would add that little Spanish flair to it.
Greek. I'm fucking it up, you know.
what about our next movie? Try to pronounce that in Greek. Because people say Dogtooth 2009, but actually,
yeah, I just say Dogtooth. The real, the actual
Kino name. Dontes.
Kuvutovkoch. I don't know.
No, you can't read Greek.
It looks like it looks like someone was having a stroke trying to say.
Yeah. Hey, like, but, yeah. Real quick, I will say that's kind of crazy when you see these movies, both actually more Alps, we'll get into it later, but yeah, isn't it crazy? I'm used to seeing Arabic or Chinese or whatever on signs, but Greek on hospital signs is kind of wild
crazy.
To me still.
Yeah, it looks crazy. Well, Dogtooth is his follow-up, his second mm-hmm. feature from 2009. This is the film that really put him on the map, even though even though it's not the film that like was his like big, I don't know, like some like maybe a film like The Lobster or maybe even The Sacred Deer or probably more so like a bigger splash for him. But this was the one that like was like, oh shit, because I even think it won something at Cannes. I don't know what award.
Un certain regard. So like it's and a word of youth. So those are both kind of the Safdie is also won that. So it's sort of the young filmmaker.
Yeah.
It's not the Palm or whatever. It's just one of those earlier, it's but it's huge. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like a up and coming filmmaker kind of award.
Exactly.
That got. And it's interesting because I mean, well, I'll do what I always do and I'll read the Letterboxd synopsis. I feel like most MAS listeners know about Dogtooth, but we'll do it because we're going down the line and we're trying to be organized about this.
Yeah. You're organized.
The cat is the most feared animal there is. I don't know why that's there. Okay. Three teenagers are confined to an isolated country estate that could very well be on another planet. The trio spend their days listening to endless homemade tapes that teach them a whole new vocabulary. Any word that comes from beyond their family abode is instantly assigned a new meaning. Hence, the sea refers to a large armchair and zombies are little yellow flowers. Having invented a brother whom they claim to have ostracized for his disobedience, the uber controlling parents terrorize their offsprings into submission. Okay, that's a very detailed.
That's so dumb. Why would they go that far into the that's not necessary. Yeah.
Right. That's not really necessary, but it does. It tells you what the movie is, but this movie is kind of so much more. It's an interesting movie because it does what I was kind of hinting at, or not even hinting at, outright saying to you. As why I like him and why I kind of like his kind of stuff appeals to me. It's because he's like, okay, well, his way of getting around what I said I encountered, which is like, oh, when you try to do things that are fantastical or surreal, but set in sort of somewhat of reality.
Yeah.
One way to do that is to say, okay, well, yeah, it is reality, but the characters within the reality don't know what reality is.
Exactly.
Like because their parents have essentially made a new alternative society that's just under the roof of their home,
exactly.
Which is kind of what parents kind of do anyways. But in this way, this one is completely shut off. This is like completely shut off from the outside, any outside influences. And like, I just remember like the father, for me, what stuck out was like the sexual shit, which is present in all Yorgos movies, even Quinceañera has had it, but like not to the degree that Dogtooth does. It's even like some incestuous shit in there.
Because they have, I mean, not have to, I don't condone it, but it's like if your parents close everything off, then obviously the next mate has to be within the family because they can't go outside the kids, basically.
Right.
And they're not even kids, they're like, I mean, they're grown, right? It's that's what's
right. And
creepier.
Then the father has this weird, like kind of sits, I don't know if it's like a business deal with a woman who works at his wherever he works at. He works at some sort of factory or some
factory,
kind of,
and she's a security guard.
She's like
right.
a security guard, but he like pays her to come over and fuck his son. It's fucking weird.
That's the whole episode, by the way.
Dogtooth has its champions. I being one of them. A lot of people like Dogtooth.
Yeah.
DC, what's your opinion of Dogtooth? Is this actually, did you just now watch Dogtooth recently?
Yeah. So I was about to say, all I've seen of Yorgos is of Mr. Lanthimos's output so far was the American stuff and the more recent American stuff. So I hadn't seen The Favorite. I hadn't seen any of the Greek movies. So I sort of did a binge of his Greek films, and those all have, like, they're different in thematics, but they're all very similar aesthetically. Okay. You can tell these are European movies. Actually, it looks like they were made way earlier. So I was almost surprised. I know he's a young guy relatively, so he couldn't have made them in the 70s, but it almost looks like it was from like the 80s or 70s, like Aki Kaurismäki, that sort of like very developmental European style. So that's that. To me personally, Dogtooth, I don't get the hype. I liked it, of course, and it was a little twisted, but, and not to jump forward, but Alps is the one. I love Alps. Alps, I was cooming, not sexually.
I had to Google Yorgos's age. He's 50. So
yeah.
So yeah. And it's interesting because when he started, there was no, at that point when he started, there was no film scene in Greece. Like, it was nothing. So like, him and those and the people who were his peers or his contemporaries from Greece were like a new movement. They were like a move. I think they even tried to give it a name.
They always call it, dude. I'm pissed off. Can I give you a little quick rant here? Mm-hmm. Every time a few people from a country do great movies, they're always like, oh, this is the new wave, the German new wave, the French, like French. Okay, France, I understand, but every country, come on now.
Right, you know, and even Yorgos was kind of like, he felt kind of weird about that. We was like, that's just stupid. Like, first of all, like, not all the movies that the all our movies weren't the same. Like,
at all
our movies
weren't,
you know, movies weren't all weird like his, and you know what I mean? Like, well, there were some, but like, he represents a movement, because at the time that he came up and when he was making Dogtooth and Kenyatta, like, there was nothing. Like, he even said, like, you know, he started making commercials and sort of like
music videos too.
He was making all these commercials all the, and it was using that to like be able to just, and because there was no film industry in Greece like that, the expectation was like never like that we have to follow rules or anything. He's like we just took, you know, whatever money I was able to make doing commercials, put it back into the features, and we just did what we wanted.
Which is kind of good, though, I'll be honest, because, for example, the same thing, I'm working on the next movie, and basically, if you're trying to do anything in LA, you're screwed, because
it's the worst, because having lived in LA, and kind of understanding, like, because it is a movie town,
exactly,
they fucking hit you over the head. There's, like, no tax incentives in LA, you have to get permits for everything, every fucking thing, you know, like, it's pretty cost prohibitive to shoot in LA, which is
exactly
crazy.
Whereas big cities like, you know, Chicago, even New York to some extent, like, New York's really saturated with a bunch of these wannabe filmmakers, but still, like, it you can shoot on the street and people are more used to it, and it's not, but not used to it in the way that's like governmental, you know, it's not yet. We'll see what happens in the future, but I don't think it's that. It's more free. So just bringing it back to Yorgos that way too, if there's no scene, there's no expectation of what you're supposed to do, then maybe you're more free to go wild, and that could be dangerous, but, you know.
And I like scenes that are outside of the hubs. Like, those are the cool scenes to me. Like, fuck New York, fuck LA.
Where are the good ones in America?
I mean, you got little scenes. Like, I think Austin has a little scene, obviously, because it's Austin, but it's like another fake version of, you know, LA, New York.
Joe Rogan movies. Yeah.
Right. I'm trying to think of like local scenes in terms of film.
I know, like, Chicago is pretty cool. Like,
Chicago's got their
friends.
Own little scene. Like, Jennifer Reeder, I'm not really a big fan. She's from Columbus, where I live. She's from Columbus, Ohio, but she's in Chicago. And I think she's somebody who, her name carries weight in Chicago. Like, she's like a Chicago independent filmmaker. Even though she's a Columbus, so she's got dual citizenship and dual stateship.
Whatever the
word would be for that. Someone from two different areas. I know. I just feel like it would be cool to just build scenes in places like that aren't located in LA or New York. I mean, LA and New York, or LA and New York. I love LA and I love New York. And I also simultaneously hate them too, for different reasons.
Yeah, of course.
There's some overlap, but, you know, there'll always be sort of what they are in terms of what they meant and what they continue to mean for like film and the entertainment industry at large. they're definitely going to, you know, be places and that you will continue to seek talented people from, because there's, they have a lot, and they will be, you know, it'll be places you travel to, obviously, if you have, you know, films to show and shit to participate in. Like I said, most of the stuff that I've been paid for was all shit that stemmed from, you know, the places where you think movies would, you know, come from.
But they're good places to look forward to, you know what I'm saying? Like, that's also the thing. Like, you shouldn't combine everything. There should be a place you start, a place where you have your own community, like your home, quote-unquote. And then you also have those cities where you can have bigger budget things. Like, I don't want to mesh every... I don't want Hollywood to move to Boise, Idaho, you know what I'm saying? Right. Like, I don't want to move it. It's good that they're there, but there's also other options.
And I like I like regional filmmakers, you know, like, for real.
Exactly,
like,
yeah.
George Romero, you know, obviously Pittsburgh, you know. I mean, obviously, you got to say Richard Linklater, you know, Robert Rodriguez, because they're both.
I'm angry with him.
They're both. I mean, Robert Rodriguez isn't a filmmaker who I feel like you outgrow him quick. Like, I feel like he's a great filmmaker when you're like 12 to probably, you know, maybe even 20, you know, and maybe if you're, you know, maybe it depends on your taste, because some people's taste is. Changes. You might be in your mid-20s, you're still big in him, but like at a certain point you grow out of Robert Rodriguez, because Robert Rodriguez is making, like, as much as I love Desperado and shit like that as a kid, you know, when I was young, it's like, now it's like I'm not really checking for a Robert. He, like, he did a movie that was basically like Cure with Ben Affleck.
Excellent.
Cure, obviously goated movie. Perfect movie, but I didn't watch it. I have it on my drive. I might watch it one night when I just feel
The remake, the spiritual remake, or Cure itself? You've seen Cure.
I've seen Cure. Yeah.
Okay.
The original Cure with the Kurosawa Cure, not
the Ben Affleck.
The other Kurosawa.
Kiyoshi. Yeah.
Yeah, Kiyoshi Kurosawa. He's his Cure. That's what we're talking about. Well, Robert Rodriguez had a movie that came out a year ago or a year and a half ago, something like that, with Ben Affleck, which is a lot like Cure.
Is it like Hypnotic, that movie?
Yeah, Hypnotic.
That's it. Oh, dude, I thought it was
watched the trailer and I was like, this is like Cure for like dumbasses. Like, this is like Cure for meatheads.
Because I heard it was like Inception too, a little bit, where he's like this guy who jumps between like consciousness. I love Ben Affleck, dude. I hate to admit it. I kind of do. He's like the reverse Matt Damon. Ben Affleck, he did Gigli. Awesome movie. Terrible movie, but also like you respect that. It's kind of a sick movie in the idea of it.
Affleck's director run, and then sort of like he just decided to like focus on not directing, and I don't know,
self filmmaker. Like, you love to see it dude. He's been ruined by J-Lo, he's been ruined by Ana de Armas. Anyways, what's up with her, by the way? So I don't want to talk trash right away, we'll get into that afterwards.
What's up with
goodness,
who, Ana de Armas?
Yeah,
I don't know. She's one of those people who, like, I can't look into her eyes more than 10 seconds because she will hypnotize me.
Oh, in a positive sense. Okay. Because I'd be puking, like, personally.
No, like, that's...
I hate her, dude. Sorry. She's a great person.
Saying,
probably,
like, I'm not even talking about her acting or anything that. I'm just talking about, like, you know how, like, there are certain people who, like, that's why she's an actor, is she has that weird, like, kind of like...
The star,
like,
power. Yeah.
Glamour you. If you call her, like, she could just stare at you long enough and you'd be like, would you like a cookie? You know what I mean? Some shit.
Yes, honey. I'll get Dunkin' Donuts for you. You know. Yeah.
Like, that's the quality that she has. But I don't even know how we got off on that. Oh yeah, we were talking about Ben Affleck.
I just hate her. Sorry. I don't know.
Yeah, okay. I mean, dude,
blonde.
People,
goodness gracious. Sorry.
I know a lot
of
people that don't like Ana de Armas.
That's just because she's popular, though. You know what I'm saying? Anybody who's popular, I don't want to join a herd of haters or whatever. And she's doing her thing. That's good. But she started off as this, like, ooh, I'm the hot girl. And then she did the movie with Keanu Reeves. And then they try to put her in serious stuff, like Blonde.
You mean Knock Knock, the movie that Eli Roth did? It's what's that? What's the original movie that they... Death. It has Clint Eastwood's ex-wife. Death. It's not Death Dream. It's Death something. I'm blanking on it right now. But
damn, Knock, okay. Knock, I didn't know that.
Yeah,
but just, basically,
that movie is actually better than the Knock Knock movie, but yeah.
I'll check it out. So yeah, that's what I'm saying. So basically, they just put her in a bunch of stuff, and then she was their Blonde, dude. Oh, Blonde just makes my blood boil, dude. I love Blonde. I know. And the mutual friends of ours do as well. So that's, you know, but goodness. Yeah. Anyways, and now she's doing like Marvel shit. Not really, but pseudo Marvel, like the new James Bond and the Gray Man and stuff like that. So it's just...
She's definitely a Bond girl, though. She's a Bond girl for sure. Like, yeah, you know a Bond girl when you see one. You're like, yeah, it's a Bond girl. So yeah. I'm not mad at her doing that type of
shit. I'm not mad either. I don't know. It's just weird. Listen, where she was like,
there's certain people that are annoying because they're popular for sure. Zendaya is one of them.
Whoa, you don't like Zendaya?
I didn't like her. I just find it like because she's popular, and it's the same thing with like Timothy Chalamet, right? Like,
yeah,
because they're like popular actors, or even Jenny Ortega, like for a moment, I feel like she's.
Yeah. And then like, she did the Montreal Scream, and then no one talked about her again.
Because they put them in your face so much, and they promote them so much. And you can blame the publicist that they have probably mixed with the industry itself. Mm. It does get annoying. So I get it. Like you're just,
you have like Chalamet interviewing Martin Scorsese, and I wanted to gouge my eyes out. Yeah, it was great.
yeah. Timmy, remember, what's that? Do you see that video of Timmy Chalamet when he was in like performing art school, and he was like, on stage singing like and rapping and saying like Timmy Chop. Okay, awesome. maybe we should cut that in editing. It's the worst shit ever.
It's time to do my dance, Timmy Tim, pull up your pants. Hooli hookoo shit, I pick my way just from France. It's Lil Timmy Tim. I am a boss. You really like my shirt. Should I take it off?
It's like the L to the OG from Succession. I love to see a guy rap. Yeah, you'll
definitely. Shout out to Timothy Chalamet for being a twink. But
so we got to get back to Yorgos. But real quick, I do want to say that these from this generation, I haven't seen Euphoria, but all the kids that came out of Euphoria, not kids, I mean, they're older than me, but all these people who came out of Euphoria, I kind of love. I love Jacob Lordy. I think Hunter Schafer, which she plays in the Yorgos, maybe we'll talk about later. She's great as well. So I feel like a lot of these people, they're talented, you know, but I understand that once you see them, I went to France and they're on billboards and shit. That gets annoying. I understand that.
Yeah. Shout out. Look at DC Flex and I went to France.
Who was in Paris?
Got my niggas in Paris and they going gorillas. Huh?
Anyways, but yeah, so.
Persians in Paris, no. Yeah, I know you're not Persian, you're Iranian, but whatever.
I still don't understand that. I question my mom. I was like, does that exist? And she's like, I don't know what you're talking about. Get out of my face. Yeah. Anyways.
But Yorgos. So Dogtooth. We didn't really talk much about Dogtooth.
Sorry. Yeah, I don't have much to say about it. So if you want to go.
I don't really either, because it's one of those. I feel like you could go into your favorite podcast app right now. Whatever you listen to podcasts on, type in Dogtooth and you're going to find a million podcasts about Dogtooth that will talk about Dogtooth.
What do they say though? Have you heard them? Not to cut you off, but like, have you heard what they have to say? Because I couldn't imagine.
I want
to
say, yeah, I've heard podcasts about Dogtooth in the past. It's been so long. I don't remember. Yeah. It's just one of those movies that has currency. You know what I'm saying? Like people are like, yeah, Dogtooth is some fucked up shit. I fuck with Dogtooth. You know what I mean? So like, yeah, Dogtooth, if I fuck with Dogtooth, it's great. Yeah. Definitely see it. We don't, there's not really much to add to the conversation, in my opinion, about Dogtooth.
Actually, it's a commentary about helicopter parenting, and it's actually talking about movies.
I mean,
I
feel like Yorgos has so many other movies that you can dive into that are worth it. And I feel like Dogtooth is, you know, it's gotten a lot of shine, even though it's probably considered to be more of a cult movie. Mm-hmm. But it's
what kicked him off as a real filmmaker in the world, but not with normie audiences. That would be later. But speaking of movies, I love the Alps. Let's get into Alps.
So
I fucking love Alps.
So Dogtooth came out in when did Dogtooth come out?
2009. I got my typewriter notes here,
that.
Dude.
Look at that. Okay, so Alps followed it up in 2011, and I love Alps. Alps is the way I'll describe it before I even. Well, let me go ahead and read the synopsis.
It is with
a nurse, a paramedic, a gymnast, and her coach offer a service for hire when they stand in for dead people by appointment, hired by relatives, friends, or colleagues of the deceased to assist with the grieving process. Mm-hmm. Yes. This movie is Yorgos Lanthimos's The Girlfriend Experience.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah, okay.
It's interesting because the character the main character who is the nurse, played by the woman who the actress who played the older sister in Dogtooth, I like her. Let me get her name correct. Her name is Angeliki Papulia. Papulia.
That's pretty good. Yeah. Co-signed.
Yeah, she's a. Okay, she's born in Athens, Greece. Yes. Okay. She's an interesting actor for a lot of reasons. But I just loved how in this movie with this weird concept of like this service, this Alps service where they name themselves after the Alps mountains, where they are just like, oh, your relative died. Well, we will stand in for them at during your grieving process for you know, however long. Right. Well, she kind of like takes it too far, and she's like, she's continuing to be stand-ins for these people's dead relatives, even outside of the group, not telling the group, but then also continuing relationship improperly. She's like, you know, having sex with them, doing all kinds of shit. Like, I just found it a fascinating way to look at, like, I don't know, like, it's weird because I feel like this movie might be some sort of commentary on codependent relationships too. Because weirdly enough, in this story, you would think that the codependent relationship would be inherent in the family members who lost somebody, right? Where they're like, that person's no longer there and I need them there and they're not. But really what happens is it's the people, specifically the nurse character, who is codependent.
Yeah.
She needs to be wanted. She needs these weird relationships with these people.
Because in her own life, it's not really present. Like her dad, for example, right? She comes home. She's, I mean, I don't want to be mean to the woman. She's probably great, but she looks like 40. I mean, you know, so like she's not a child. And then she comes home and her dad's like, okay, bring me water, put water my eyes. She always keeps putting these drops in his eyes and everything. So she's very coldly treated in her personal life. So she seeks warmth outside in this very artificial way.
Right.
I think it's the first time I see like Lanthimos's very cold world. You know what I'm saying? Like everything is dark so far. But it's not the characters who are bad necessarily. It's like the whole universe in which they operate is just unforgiving. You know,
well, he's not a sentimental filmmaker. Like, and I love that about him. He's not a sentimental filmmaker. His films contain sentiment.
Yeah,
but they're not sentimental. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So again, like. It's hard for me. Like I admit it already. Like I'm full bias because he makes the type of movies that I'm just going to like. And I acknowledge that like a lot of people just aren't like, you know what I'm saying? It's not one of those. He's not one of those filmmakers who I'm going to expect people. Like I wouldn't recommend him to, you know, like a normie.
Yeah, but you like that, don't you, Ryan? I know you a little bit. You kind of like being the edgy, not edgy, but like I like the twisted stuff. And you guys couldn't handle my movies.
No, I don't even feel that way because, you know, maybe when I was a little younger, but not anymore. Like, it doesn't make me feel like edgy to like this shit.
No, of course.
I just like it. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's totally independent of like what other people like or don't like. I just fully accept that, like, oh, like there's certain kinds of stories, certain types of. Let's say motifs and themes that I appeal to me and that's like, true. And I just accept it. I don't even try to analyze it beyond that other than like, it's just, this is my shit. And I just think that like, I just by default don't assume that that's going to translate into everyone else. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, so no, it's not even an edgy thing.
No, well, to be clear, that would be an insult. I'm not saying, oh, you like it because other people don't, but I feel the same way in that I like to have some movies and it's not, I don't think about it that way when I watch them. I just like them, but it is a nice feeling to have something sort of private. I mean, it's not private to yourself. Millions of people love it.
Right.
It's good. Not gatekeeping even. I'm not going to be like, oh, you wouldn't handle it because you're not like me, intelligent. That's all negative stuff. I'm just saying it's good to have these, like some movies I can share with some people, others with others. It's not like one thing for everybody, you know?
Right. It's like a good book or something. You know what I mean? Like there's certain, like, you know, like people will, there's a certain kind of book that somebody like, I like this book and same thing goes with films. There're just certain kind of films that you just kind of know, like they hit the sweet spot for you and that's enough. Like, you know what I mean? It's not like, it doesn't have to be like everyone doesn't have to like it, you know? And if they do, that's fine too. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? But like, cause there's some movies like that for me. Like I have a few movies where I'm like, hey, everybody likes the movie. I do too. Like, you know what I mean? Like, so
yeah,
of course I got a color wheel. So if I froze, I don't know what that was about, but,
but yeah, no, it is what it is. I think the audio is still clean though. So we're good.
But yeah. So I mean, what else is there to say about Alps? It's hard.
Wait a second. We didn't even talk about Alps. Goodness.
That's what I mean. Like, what else is there to say about Alps that won't spoil the movie.
True. Like, are we doing a non-spoiler?
I don't know. Should we?
Look, I don't want to be gratuitous, but let me look at my because I don't want to spoil it just to spoil it, but I think that some things do, like for example, Kinds of Kindness. I knew nothing about it going in, but we kind of have to spoil it though, just for to talk
fine
about
with
it.
Me. If you guys haven't watched Alps, pause the episode right now and go watch it so we can talk about it. I will say this: it opens with a gymnast who is Yorgos Lanthimos's wife, which is coming back because on the last DC thought Yorgos was married to Emma Stone.
Yeah.
And also I believe Jay from
Luke, yeah, he co-signed me.
Like, well, they're Yorgos loves her. They're like having a polyamorous relationship. I don't know about all that. But
yeah, that Lil Rez Wonderbread, everybody, he's agreeing with me.
I'll probably have, you know, I feel like we're going to talk about Kinds of Kindness on Eight Plates, but I probably will do a Kinds of Kindness episode by itself because it deserves it. There's a moment in this. Here's how I knew, and I'm not trying to skip ahead to the Eight Plates episode. I will only say there's a few moments in Kinds of Kindness that I predicted I just kind of was like, I said to myself, like, yeah, it's just because, again, the wavelength that he's on, I'm on that wavelength.
Nice.
So it's a way of me saying, like, yeah, I'm a similar pervert to him, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah. Like, but in a good way, like artistically, not like, Because I think that, I don't know him personally. I hope nothing comes out in the next few years that proves me wrong, but I don't think Yorgos is a sick person at all. He's a person who's very capable at channeling these feelings of disgust in his art, but I don't ascribe that to him.
He's a 6'1" former basketball player like myself. You know, I gotta. That likes movies, you know. I fucks with him, man. I fucks with him.
Hell yeah.
I'm biased.
Yeah.
But
Alps, dude. Oh my gosh, man. The proof. There's so many things. The Greeks speaking English. You know what I'm saying?
That's like so funny the way they're saying English. And you know it's bad English.
Yeah.
And if you hear Yorgos speak, you know that he speaks better English than that. So you know, like, this is like, it's like, yeah, no, say it worse.
Yeah,
like, you
exactly.
know what I mean? Like, you say it bad. Like, it's such a weird, he's really good at that. Like, his movies contain these scenes that like capture awkwardness in a way that's uncomfortable and like it provokes you. Like, yeah, like it fucks with the audience the way it's like, yeah, this is weird. Yeah. Watch how weird this is. Like,
but it's really weird. It's not like a few seconds of weird and then like a Marvel type, isn't this awkward? It's not Deadpool coming out being like, Yorgos, you know what I'm saying?
They
like,
lean all the way into it. They don't
exactly.
Yeah. It's not like, it's like, no, we're gonna do the weird shit.
But I mean, so many things here, like power dynamics, like all the themes that we see, like the fact that it's always shifting and then someone has a power and the guy, for example, the coach. At first, you know, he's like, you're not ready for pop music. And then she's like so sad. And then, spoilers, she tries to like hang herself and the gymnast. And then at the end, when it actually happens, it's not this reversal where like, screw you, coach, I hate you. She kind of comes back to him as like, you're the best coach in the world. It's not.
Because she gets to do the pop song.
Exactly. But that's what I'm saying. It's like, it's all these things are not classic, like, oh, you're mean to me, then I'll be mean to you. All these dynamics work in ways which are real. People do behave like that, but they're not like classic in film. It's not just like, oh, I'm bad, now I'm good. Now I'm bad, now I'm good. It's very nuanced in that way, which I really loved in this movie. And it's just enjoyable in general.
The gymnast played by Yorgos' wife, Ariel Labed.
Yeah.
Who's close, you know, she's around my age at this point. Yeah, like she's a pretty, I saw her in I think she's in The Favorite, but I also saw her in The Criterion Closet with Yorgos. Have you seen that?
No, I haven't. I don't watch the DVD ones because I'm posted DVD as a format.
Yeah, The Criterion Closet, where the Criterion allows famous filmmakers and other people to go into their closet and take as many fucking expensive ass Blu-rays as they want, man. Bro, I would fucking, they would never invite me back. I would be like, all right, I'm gonna take six of these Kurosawa. I'm just taking whole rows. Never invite me ever. It's gonna be a robbery. I just think it's there's a lot of interesting aspects. The guy who comes up with the name for their group,
the Alps, leader, sort of
the leader, it's funny. Like, he works with her at the hospital. He's like a, is he an ambulance driver? No,
I think so. He's the guy in the beginning. Like, when she,
well, he's in the back of the ambulance when the girl's dying. Right. Like, or well, she ends up, she doesn't die then, she dies later. But yeah.
So real quick, that's the Challengers link here. It's a tennis player, and then she gets in an accident, I think a car accident, something, and then he asks her these questions like, who's your favorite actor, et cetera, et cetera. It's all weird, but then basically that's how this group takes aspects of people's lives. So for example, they get as much information as they can so that they can do the mimicry,
and then,
right?
And then it's this service that apparently they charge people for.
Yeah.
And because he pays them. And then when Yorgos, his wife, the gymnast, when she fucks up because she won't say a line to a grieving old man about like coffee or tea or something, like, he doesn't pay her. Like, and like, they're very hard on her too. Like, you're talking about power dynamics, like the leader of the group and the coach character are very hard on the gymnast. And like you said, there's a moment where the nurse walks in and she's hanging herself. And that's one of those moments where that dark, like, it gets, Yorgos has this funny way of like injecting like dark moments out of nowhere. Just like, it gets deadly serious. You know, it's this weird, quirky, like, what the fuck is happening? And then all of a sudden it's like, that was one of those moments where you're like, oh shit. Like, even in his first film, where the girl's in the bathroom and she's took too many pills for some reason.
Yeah.
I still don't know what she was trying to kill herself. And then he like makes her throw up. And it makes you like, what is that movie about? I'm still thinking about making connections with that movie as we talk about Alps. But yeah, Alps is just, I mean, it's one of those movies where you could be like, oh yeah, it's weird, but like, it's so much more than that, because it clearly is, it's a movie about grief, obviously, and it's about grieving, but it's also, you know, about how people not only grieve about people they've lost, but how people grieve about almost the lives that they have. You know what I mean? Like, it's a weird, it works on a lot of levels. It's a movie that, like, I'm surprised that this movie didn't really.
Yeah.
I feel like it doesn't have the dog tooth kind of, you know,
it's the kinds of notoriety. Kindness to, it's the kinds of kindness to the poor things. Like, Dogtooth was a big one. Then he made another one quickly after, and it was sort of like, for me, it's much better as a film. But I feel like it didn't.
I think Alps is actually better than maybe. I don't know. They're kind of
my favorite. It's my favorite.
They're kind of close to me. They're close, even though I think I might have ranked Dogtooth higher. I think I might have gave Dogtooth 4.5, and I gave Alps 4.
Oh, you with your ratings. You know I'm anti-ratings, bro. Come on now. How can you put a number 2 movie? Goodness gracious.
I mean, again, I don't take it that seriously. I just, I just noticed, like, I think I rated it higher. But yeah, like, I don't know if you're going to find it very low, movies that I rank very low of his. So yeah, I think, spoiler alert.
Now
DC, on the other hand,
thankfully I don't rate movies, but I will say real quick that I did enjoy this a lot, and I think that's kind of, we're kind of running in circles here. It's a great film. You know the premise, sort of. Go for it, put it on. It's on Amazon in Canada even, which is unheard of. So go ahead and go.
Holy shit.
So just go ahead and watch that.
I'm not.
And Necktie is on YouTube, the 2013 Necktie.
Yeah, so Necktie is a 2-minute movie that you could go watch right now for free on fucking YouTube
from
2013. And it's 5 teens try to discover what happens when you die. I loved it, dude. It's like fucking the Greek version of, like, I don't know, like Dead or Alive, but like mixed with what's the other fucking movie?
Battle Royale, like when they, or no?
No, I mean, Battle Royale, not Dead or Alive. Battle Royale, and the reason I said Dead or Alive, I was thinking about Versus. You know the movie Versus? Because it's in a forest. It's a Japanese movie, but it's nothing like this, but it's just a bunch of guys in a forest fighting each other and shooting and killing each other. That's why I say it's like You know, it's like the
yeah,
like
yeah, yeah.
But it's just kids running around in school uniforms with a gun.
and they do like a Barry Lyndon duel, and then yeah, that's
yeah, they do a duel. It's
spoiler
it's,
alert. I don't want to spoil the 2 minute short, but someone does die at the end.
Someone dies. Someone dies. I liked it.
I hated it. This is what I'm talking about. Okay,
is,
and I'm not.
Let me say this.
Yeah,
is,
of course.
Is Nimic in yours?
Yeah. If you can refer to it, but yeah, Nimic. Because I just go
like this more than you like Nimic.
No, I didn't know.
I was like about to say I feel like Nimic's better for sure.
Yeah, exactly.
The necktie. If I was gonna rate Yorgos's things, I would put this at the bottom. But yeah. I still enjoyed it. And it's still 2 minutes. It's not even.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what I mean? It's not really. You know, so whatever. So check out that it's easily available. It's too
yeah, but now wait a second. I gotta dunk on a little bit. This was made for Venice, the Venice Film Festival, Future Reloaded, which is like a anthology, huge film with a bunch of directors. It's right. For that same year, Paul Schrader. What Paul Schrader did, one more time, we gotta give a high five to Paul Schrader.
Paul Schrader's goated, man. He's goated.
He wore like a neon, you've probably seen this, a neon helmet and strapped a bunch of GoPros and just ran around New York City. That's sick. That's a little short.
Yeah,
that's awesome.
Well, obviously, Paul Schrader's got the better short there. But but yeah.
Anyways, but I do think it sort of goes like I wasn't disgusted by it as in like, oh, I can't believe they did. I have no filter with that stuff, like no limit. I mean, but I do think that it was like, oh, it's kids with guns. And then at the end, one of them dies. And isn't this bad? I felt like it was very like just trying to shock. But I don't know. I don't want to dunk on it too hard. But it wasn't meaningful to me.
Yeah, so if you want to see a not meaningful movie,
damn, no, dude.
No. Oh, yeah. Fuck. Necktie is a fun 2 minutes. But moving right along to 2017. No. 2017's The Killing of the Sacred Deer.
You
want to do that?
No, 2015. The Lobster. You missed The Lobster, dude.
Wait a minute. Fuck. I did miss The Lobster. You're right. What the fuck? What am I doing? Okay.
Fake Colin Yorgos Farrell. Fan. Lanthimos.
Colin Farrell, because it's Colin Farrell and Yorgos. For me, those two movies take place at the same time.
Yeah.
2015's The Lobster. This is the first Yorgos movie that I watched. I love this movie. It's so fucking stupid and so great and so kind of brilliant at the same time.
Yeah.
Let me read the letterbox synopsis and then we can talk about it. Because there's so much to talk about. I mean, again, this is one of those movies that a lot of people have talked about, but an unconventional love story. Okay. And a dystopian near future, single people, according to the laws of the city, are taken to the hotel where they are obliged to find a romantic partner in 45 days, are transformed into beast and sent off into the woods. Mm-hmm. Yes. So it takes place in this world where you can't, if you're single, then you're basically forced to find to get married, find a partner. If not, you get turned into an animal. And you get to pick the animal that you want to be turned into. but yeah, this is a movie that's so interesting because it talks about like, so it's such a funny concept and they take it dead seriously.
Yeah.
Like,
that's right.
You know, that's again, like he's not a sentimental filmmaker. So like, again, that same lack of sentimentality is what makes The Lobster work. Because this is a very, I don't know, fantastical premise. But even
is this magic realism? Is that count or no? That's not.
I would say this counts as magical realism. All right, it's definitely surrealist cinema. It's surrealist cinema.
Is it sci-fi?
There's nothing. There's no science, though. You know what I'm saying? Like, there's no.
And turning into animals.
There's no science behind it, though. Like, it's just like they just turn him into an animal. Like, you know,
yeah, that's true.
Explain
true.
How that's possible. There's no explanations given to like the logistics of how you can turn into it. Why are you just able to pick any animal? Colin Farrell's character, obviously, he decides that he wants to be turned into a lobster for some fucking reason because he feels like that's representative of who he was as a man.
He loves like, Jordan Peterson. Jordan Peterson loves lobsters as well. He's like,
yes, this is about this is a George unofficial George P, what is it?
Jordan BP, Jamie P.
Jordan Kermit the Frog, Canada's Kermit Professor Peterson.
That's just how we talk here. I'm doing an accent this whole episode. That's how everybody talks in Canada.
That's not true. I've been to Canada. You guys do not talk like that.
Yeah, we're all putting on a show.
And you're not even the Quebecois people talk like that.
But anyways, yeah, dude, this is the first real, also another thing, this is the first movie of Lanthimos's which is set in the future. I think it's the only one, although Kinds of Kindness could be like 2040 or 30, like near future, but I think it's the only like futuristic
but here's the thing though, it's interesting that you say that, because while yeah, I guess, but also like there's nothing about it that makes it futuristic
other true than, it is very current. Yeah
right, like it could take place any, because it's just like these people go to this hotel and it's the, mm-hmm. there's no fancy, you know, there's no flying cars. There's no other than the fact that like there's this weird world where the rules of, I don't know, the rules of physics don't apply the same way they apply in the reality. I guess because you can't physically turn into an animal, like. But you know, and there's no, they haven't outlawed you being a single person.
Yeah,
which that's the dystopian aspect of the idea or the concept, right? Which is like in this world, like it's pretty much been made illegal, like once you hit a certain age you have to be married, there is no bachelor for life
shit, but isn't that the reality we're living in, Ryan? You know, after you reach a certain age, but you like, can't do these things.
Think the obvious commentary on like being a single person and not and how you feel not to be how you feel ostracized, or how awkward it feels to be the single person around friends who are together, couples, mm-hmm. yeah. that weird, like this movie is definitely.
I wonder what inspired Yorgos Lanthimos to do that, Ryan. I wonder what that is. Maybe being married to a woman he's not. I don't know. I don't want to, that's too far, but yeah.
I don't know what's going on with them, but they seem like a lovely couple. She's still in his movies. They're still married. You know, there's only a 10-year age gap. Shout out to Yorgos. He's not on some weird shit.
Yeah.
Unless they met when she was 16. Oh no.
I don't know. We'll see. Look, I don't want to do these accusations, but I do think that it is a little suspicious, you know, to do this movie. Anyways.
No.
You don't believe the Emma Stone stuff, so it doesn't matter.
No. We're not. Yorgos is beating the allegations. We're not.
okay. But so this is basically Colin Farrell abuse, which I love. Not that I don't like the guy. I love the guy, but I do think that he's particularly great in roles where it's just he's downtrodden, where everything's going bad for him. True Detective.
We forgot. We haven't mentioned, though, is Rachel Weisz.
Well, Rachel Weisz, yeah.
Yes, Weisz.
Vice News. Yeah, no, you're right. It is. Yeah.
Rachel Weisz, who's also in The Favorite, by the way. But yeah.
That's right. Also Sean Duggan, who looks like Gene Hackman. He looks exactly like Gene Hackman.
Shout out to Gene Hackman's goated.
Yeah, he's still alive. Rock
still
on.
Still alive, still kicking. 90 some years old. Just kicking.
Yeah.
Yeah, leave Gene Hackman alone. Like, remember that picture that somebody took of him? Like, just like, come on, man, leave him alone, bro. He's like,
it's like, hey, can you believe how disgusting he looks? It's like, that guy is like five times your age. Right, yeah, it's a
century almost. Like, leave Gene Hackman the fuck alone, bro. He was fucking Popeye Boyle, bro. Leave him the fuck alone.
Yes,
he was in
French Connection,
Crimson Tide, bro. He's fucking he's got classics under his belt. How dare
Night Moves?
Night Moves. Come on, man.
Hell yeah.
We stand Gene Hackman on MASU. If you don't know.
But doesn't Sean Duggan look like him though?
Yeah, he does. He definitely has some Hackman.
Damn, dude, don't
aura.
Say it like that.
He's got some Hackman aura.
Okay, yeah.
Just shout out to him. I like The Lobster. It was one of those movies that like I can tell a lot. The Lobster to me is one of those movies where like it says a lot about, it tells me a lot about you, how you feel about The Lobster, because like it's a movie that's well known enough. Right. Yeah. It's well known enough that like enough people have seen it beyond just the weirdos who would see it like me. Like, you know what I mean? So like, it's funny to be like, oh, I know people that are like that movie. I fucking hate that movie, The Lobster. It kind of lets me know what wavelength you're on a little bit, where I'm like, you hate The Lobster.
It's a very common thing, though, because a lot of people,
bro, couldn't be me.
A lot of people do that, which it kind of annoys me. Not that, oh, I'm this intelligent being, but whatever. But I feel like it takes a bit of This is horrible. I'm not beating the allegations with like film IQ. You know what I'm saying? Because just because a film makes you feel bad, doesn't mean that it's bad. You know what I'm saying? Like if a film, in fact, I'd say if a film is able, not through hacky stuff, not just like through grading
it's
sound.
It's funny or, though. The Lobster is funny. That's another thing we haven't talked about.
Yeah.
So up to this point is that these movies are funny, even though they're dark.
Yeah.
They're like still funny.
Mm-hmm.
And like as we progress down his filmography, the humor will become more present and more pronounced in, I think, in some of his other movies, but they're still funny as fuck. And like The Lobster is like, to me, up to this point, probably the funniest movie he's done. Yeah. And he only gets more they only get more humor. Like they're not outright comedies, but damn, they're funny. Like this, The Lobster, I laugh so many times watching The Lobster. Like,
oh yeah.
You know,
it's the American effect though, I think, because European movies are funny in a different way sometimes. I feel like American movies are, I don't know, look, I don't want to make this like sweeping statements, but I do think that they employ comedy more as a tool than European films do. I don't know if that's, you agree with that.
Yeah, I can see that. I kind of see that, but I also feel like humor like is just different depending upon the region of the filmmaker, like, you know, that they like are the films are coming from, like, because like there's a very kind of way that, like, let's for example, like British humor, like, is always referred to, right? Like their British humor is very specific, and when you say British humor, you kind of already know what it is, right? Like, if you're familiar with it, you already know what that is, and it's not the same.
You know,
way
Timmy on me laddie,
right?
Yeah, yeah, mom. Yeah, yeah, great stuff.
So, yeah,
very intellectual.
French humor is a little bit more, you know.
Fuck your dad. Yeah, yeah,
yeah, that
like
kind
that.
Of stuff, and like so, like, yeah, there's different forms of humor depending upon, you know, the films. Country that it's from, but like, yeah, America's a lot more, the humor is not, we're not like, we're very lowbrow, like, you know, America,
exactly,
lowbrow and middle brow is like the baseline humor for, like, I feel like American shit. So like Americans are just like dick jokes, you know, like just goofy shit, like it's always
like you wouldn't have the main character from Alps just breaking down and dance like in Kinds of Kindness, you know what I'm saying? That scene, that's actually a great scene. I love it. My
actually,
favorite scene
she does dance in Alps, and it's pretty funny when she does it, because she's like, she runs in there after she's tried to grab her dad's dick, because by default she feels like she needs to fill in for her mother,
yeah,
that's not there, because she's been, weirdly enough, in her home as a grown woman,
mm-hmm.
she's been actively in this role that she does for other people, which is she's been filling
the caretaker
in
also I know that's not what you're saying, but also
so that moment actually made logical sense, but then when she leaves because her dad slaps her, like, what are you doing? This isn't Kentucky, ow, you know, get the fuck out of here. She runs and she goes into where the I guess it's like the his dad her dad is in this dance class thing or whatever,
yeah,
you know, old folks, they have their like dance nights or whatever where they do fucking
in Europe. I've never seen that in here.
I mean, they have like ballroom dancing type things over in America, so I don't know, mm-hmm. but like she goes in there and he starts dancing with the woman, and it's kind of funny because she's like forcing, she's being all aggressive, you know. Funny. It's not the Emma Stone dancing Kinds of Kindness, but you know, but shout out to Emma Stone.
But real quick, so now that we're on Colin Farrell, dude, what do you think of Colin Farrell? What do you love him?
I fucks with Colin Farrell. I'm a Colin Farrell
truther.
Yeah, I'm a Colin Farrell truther. I don't like a lot of actors, but I, you know, I feel like Colin seems to be an actor who would be bearable to be around.
Yeah,
most actors are not bearable, but also he's just good. You know, like he's just a good actor. Like, very, very rarely, even that stupid Penguin that he did was still great. Like, I hate that Batman movie. That Batman movie's fucking garbage. And if you like it, you're fucking dumb. But you know, we are allowed to be dumb at times. You know, everyone can be. But yeah, like Colin Farrell's still great in it. Any movie that he's in, I feel like he's great. Like you were saying, I think off mic before we start recording. Like Colin Farrell, like you could just name some, like, isn't he in these stupid, like, what is it? What's the Bosses movie? Something Bosses.
Horrible. Oh, wait horrible a second. Bosses. That's horrible an Bosses. Underrated masterpiece, dude. Horrible Bosses 1.
Colin Farrell is funny as fuck, but he's good in it though. Like, he's just great.
Yeah.
He's great.
He's doing coke in his dad's. Yeah. By the way, his dad is played by the legendary Canadian actor Donald Sutherland, who just passed away.
Yes. RIP to Donald Sutherland. He's a real one, a legend. Yeah. We also, Damn, we're just losing so many fucking people. So many icons being lost. Wow.
Oh, I thought you meant listeners.
We need to get what we need right now is we need to call up Alps so they can come over and be Donald Sutherland for us and be fucking Robert.
Yeah. You know, like, yeah.
We need that service, you know.
No. Dude, what show was that? Sorry, and I'm terrible with references. There's a show where
Detective
they do
season two.
Oh, great show. But no, actually, it's I think it's Eric Andre, where they have like a person that's not clearly not the actor, but they're like, oh, this is this person. We should. I'm sure there's Donald Sutherland impersonators, just like actors from LA or the California area, where they're like, hello, I'm Donald Sutherland, and just have them.
Get Kiefer.
Yeah.
Yeah, Jack Bauer. Yeah. You can get Jack Bauer to come and be his dad for a minute.
We should have him on the show. Let's get Jack Bauer on the show.
I watched The Lost Boys not that long ago.
I haven't seen that ever, actually. It's kind of crazy.
You know,
I love Corey Feldman. But...
You know, it's one of those movies where, like, it's overrated for sure, but, like, mm-hmm. it is very stupid, but, like, it's so of its time. Mm-hmm. And, like, you know, what's the director? He did Batman Forever. What the fuck is it?
Schumacher?
Schumacher did it, right? And like Schumacher, we know Schumacher was a very gay man. Yeah. And there's just things about it where you're like, why is this muscular bodybuilder playing a saxophone?
That's awesome, though.
To a crowd. Like, it's just like so weird. Like, there's things about the movie that are so funny to this day that, like, it's one of those movies that it has that cult following and that in it, but it was also like a commercial success. Mm-hmm. So like, it's weird. Like, I watched that movie and I'm like, yeah, this movie's dumb, but like, I've still rock with it. Cause I have some sentimentality when it comes to
your ghost does not have apparently.
I feel like he does probably just not in his films, you know, for sure. So yeah. We were talking about The Lobster. I mean, again, Colin Farrell, Yorgos, Rachel Weisz.
Yeah.
It's like the triangle offense, dog. Like, it's like, you know, like, you know, man, like, you can't go wrong with those three. And
I don't want to cut you off, but I do think that's a point out where I want to add that I think that Yorgos does a great job at casting actors from America that fit in his world. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Even I keep mentioning these newer movies, but just because I feel like Defoe and Plemons and whatever, like, they're classical celebrities in that sense, but they're also people who've done weirder stuff. Like, they're people who'd be down with it. You know what I'm saying? Like, he doesn't force Scarlett Johansson to be in his, you know what I'm saying? Like, nothing against her, but I feel like that she just wouldn't fit in a...
Watch her be in the next one.
Well, dude, that's actually a worry I have. I'm always worried. I'm this indie guy, okay? I really worry about these people who make it so big that it's like, is he going to do the next Marvel movie? You know what I'm saying? Obviously not, but I'm saying...
No, hell no.
I know, but I'm saying that in that sense, is he just going to try to one-up that too? Where it's just going
to
be like...
Not to jump too far ahead, because we're still on The Lobster, but like, Kinds of Kindness was what was ready. He has other movies ready. Like, even if you look on the Letterboxd, there's like three or four movies there that aren't. Like,
Begonia?
Like, those are like, he has other movies slated, but Kinds of Kindness was the one right after Poor Things Wrap that was already ready to go. So they went with it. Mm-hmm. So he's got other movies in the already, you know, queued up to make. And I'm not seeing him, again, when you get to a certain point in your career, you know, you're getting Oscar nominations and you're working with people that you want to work with and you're making your weird shit. He's not going to take that, man. Fuck that, bro. Like, you know what I'm saying? That's to me, like, I just.
Yorgos fan denial. It always happens.
He's not going to do it. Like, it's not. No, there's plenty of people that don't do it. Like, Tarantino doesn't, like, again, I don't, you know, as I got this big Pulp Fiction thing in the back, I just like the way it looks. But like, again, I have criticisms for him, but I do like some of his, you know, his output. And I was a bigger fan when I was young, like I feel like a lot of people were, but Christopher Nolan did it, I guess, technically, because he had to did the Batman movies. But like, those are certain guys that, like, they don't have to do it. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like Harmony Korine, we talked about maybe a little bit. Or not. Did we talk about him a little bit?
Well, my article just came out. Everybody, check out counter.com.
Yeah, check it out. Check, you just did a Harmony Korine, again, another kind of director who I'm pretty sure he just always wants to do as a filmmaker, you just, he always wants to do, he never wants to repeat himself.
Yeah.
Like he just wants to do some every time he's every, like, that's just how he's been since he started. Right. It's, yeah. it's always wants to make something new. I always want to try something new. I always want to try something new. He's that guy. Like Yorgos mm-hmm. is that guy. After all these movies, like the weird shit, like he just wants to do his weird shit. Like he's not, and he's obviously successful enough to where he doesn't have to do, you know, the fucking Marvel bullshit. Like, you know what I'm saying? Course, like, yeah. so like there are those filmmakers out there, and I respect, even if I don't like a filmmaker, particularly like in terms of like their films, there's something like, if those, there are filmmakers out there whose work I don't like, but they've never took a Marvel project and they could have took it.
Right.
Like, you automatically have my respect. Like it doesn't mm-hmm. even matter if I don't fuck with the movies. The fact that you didn't take it when so many of your peers do take it, and so many of the people that I know would slit their child's throat to write Five Nights at Freddy 5. Yeah, like, you know what I'm saying? Like some horrible bullshit. You know what I'm saying? Like, yeah, that's the shit that annoys me about the industry is like, I know people right now who they get mad because people criticize their movie, a movie that like they got like they're screenwriters who I know who get mad because people are online shitting on the movie that they wrote. But it's like, mm-hmm. you got fired off that movie. Mm-hmm. It's a fucking part three of a franchise. Yeah. You don't own, like you're up here. Like that was my Ishtar. That was my Gone with the Wind. Like, it, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
Ishtar
yeah.
is a bad movie, but like our
guy. Whoa. What did you just say?
I mean, Ishtar, shout out to Elaine May. Ishtar is not a bad movie necessarily, but Ishtar was notoriously panned. Like, you know,
it's a failure. Yeah. But
I love it. Notorious bomb and it got shitted on. Like, this is a, so that's what I mean. But like, they mm-hmm. act like their movie is that.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? They're like,
exactly.
It's a travesty that this happened. It's like, no, it's not. It's you, or even if it's successful, like if they successful, like a lot of these people will get upset because they get negative reviews again for something that you have no fingerprint on other than the fact that you cashed the check and then you wrote it and they paid it for you. But it's not like you came up with the idea. Like, I don't even want to call this writer out, but like there's a guy who was on Instagram or Twitter or X or whatever the fuck that site is called now, X. And he was like, pointed out his two movies. He was like, it took 5 years to write Saw X and 4 years to write.
Now we know who it is. So.
Right. 4 years to write his other fucking movie that was a franchise movie. And it's like, first of all, both of those were sequels.
Yeah.
They're not original specs. That was an assignment that you got hired to write on. And if it took 4 years to 5 years, it wasn't the only way that it took 4 to 5 years was if you got hired on the project early and then you did 4 to 5 years of free rewrites. You got paid, probably. You got paid initially, but all the other rewrites that you didn't do for the producers that you did for free. And then that movie came out. It wasn't because you were writing the best version of that fucking thing because you made Saw X, you know, and you made,
absolutely.
Like, you know what I'm saying? Like it's not to highlight that specific writer, but like, you know, he jumped out the window and wanted to hold that up. I was like, look guys, it's a, and it's like, and to be fair to him, the people that he's talking to would love to have done those things. You know what I'm saying? The difference between me and people like that think like me is like, I would do those, but I wouldn't be up here talking about them. Like, you know what I mean? Cause it's a job.
Well, it's the problem. I agree 100%. The problem I think, and again, I don't want to go against film.
We're talking about real filmmakers. Motherfucker.
But seriously,
real fucking filmmakers. There's a difference between
people
that are like that work. There are professionals. Mm-hmm. You're a professional for sure. Yeah, there's a lot of professionals. They can do their shit and they're craftspeople and respect to craftspeople.
Yeah.
But there's a difference. There are craftspeople and there are artists. And there are sometimes they can be both in one, but a lot of times they're not. A lot of times it's one and the other. And it takes craftspeople to work with artists. And there's artistry in being a craftsman for sure. I'm not trying to be disrespectful or none of that shit, but there are levels to everything. And there are distinctions that need to be made. And the reason that certain filmmakers have certain cachet and that their work has a certain resonance, it's because it's art. And there's another kind of filmmaker that's more like, this is corporate made content. Like this is shit that makes money and gets asses in seats, sells tickets, sells popcorn, and gets a lot of makes a profit, and that person continues to work and they do that thing. And you can respect it on that level, but you can't, some, like, these motherfuckers wanted all of it. Mm-hmm. And some of those people, they only do that one kind of thing, but then they want to be looked at like they're fucking Tchaikovsky or somebody. You know what I'm saying?
Well, that's the problem with film school, is because that's what they keep teaching you these stories about, oh, he was in the USSR and he lost his daughter and his wife and he kept going. Everybody thinks that's literally me. Everybody who is just like, you know, doing
it. Just like me, like, for real.
Yeah, exactly. Everybody's like, yeah, I'm like that person. No, it's possible to make a mistake. Not everything you do poorly is a result of this like wide machination of like, oh man, everything sucks. Like, no. And that's a good thing, because that means that if you do goof, if you do a doo-doo, you know, say, if you do like a shitty little script, it's you move on, you know, it is what it is. William Friedkin, one of my all-time favorites, he's got a bunch of unwatchable movies, dude. Who cares? People still remember the great ones. So like, I hate this sort of like crying out online stuff, because it's neediness, it's pettiness, it's pity, and I hate that.
You can't, to be fair to anybody who works or tries to pursue any kind of path in filmmaking, you can't help but have first person syndrome. Like, you can't have, you know, our main character syndrome.
What is that? When you think everything like is around you, like, it's,
yeah, you like, you look at the world and your perspective is main, like you're the main character in your
own. Oh, okay, I get you.
The way you approach life and the way you approach everything, the way you have relationships with people, is through the prism of like, I'm the main character. So it's like, but when you work at if you do filmmaking, it's, you kind of by default are thinking in main character syndrome in a way. So it's almost like you want to give people who, you know, pursue any sort of movie making path, you want to give them you want to cut them some slack, mm-hmm. you know, but at the same time, like, to be a good human being, let alone an artist, like, you got to have some level of self-awareness or some sort of, not even just some sort of self-analyzation, like, you know what I'm saying, to notice those things about yourself, and hey, filter it back into the work. Maybe, you know, maybe you can work that out in your shit, you know. Mm-hmm. I feel like that's not a thing for the majority of people who are working right now. Like, it used to be a thing. Like, it used to be a thing that you saw a lot in some of the bigger named filmmakers out there. Like you could watch their movie and like, oh, like Paul Schrader, we talk about multiple times.
Shout out Paul Schrader. Paul Schrader's
always working out something through his work.
Yeah.
Always. You know what I'm saying? And that's why his shit is good. Mm-hmm. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, even bad Paul Schrader's great. Like, you know
what I'm saying? That's what I'm saying. Yeah, yeah, yeah. You know but what it mean? Takes like, that, though. It, because
but a lot of the people working, they're not working out anything. They're working out how to like, I'm gonna put out Bad Boys for Life or whatever. Like, you know what I mean? Like, there's nothing that they're working out in that shit. Like, you know, other than like, how much more money can we make? Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's all profit motivated. There's no sense of like, I don't know. Even the way that like movies are like the templates that they tell you to write, you know, obviously the same seven books, the same, you know, Sid Field, Robert McKee story, fucking Blake Snyder, Save the Cat, you know, the hero with the hero's journey, you know, which is, I mean, you know, the
Dan Harmon's these, eight stages, right, screenwriting. These,
the Dan Harmon's wheel. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, like, yeah.
All of these goofy shits. Right. But if you ever listen to Paul Schrader talk, it's way different. Like he has his own little formula, but he starts with a problem. And then from the problem, he comes up with the metaphor. Like first, those are the first two steps. Mm-hmm. Then he builds the plot. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, but you can tell sometimes. Master Gardener, for example, it's right, like, okay.
But what I'm saying, though, like, is starting with a problem and a metaphor, like, kind of forces you to be, like, character motive. Like, it forces you to be, even if you get to the plot, right? Which, like, we're so plot-driven as an audience as we are, because we watch so much shit that is structured, and we, like, there's a lot of TV. People watch multiple seasons of shit. So it's all that shit is plot. It's just plot math, right? So like everyone is inundated with this like structure, like just through osmosis. So like, I feel like most things that you see are more about the plot, right? And the character is just there. Like, they will do things that suggest character, but it's not really character. It's just like stereotypical or stereotypes. It's just stereotypes. Yeah. Like, okay, so like, we know this person is a bad person because he has a face tattoo. Mm-hmm. You know, like shit like that. It's very,
they're part of a machination. They're like on the Ferris wheel, but they're not driving. They're just sort of like riding along. Yeah.
Like, shout out to all my people with face tattoos, but you know what I'm saying? But all I'm saying is like, I use that as an example. That's a generalization. Like, there's plenty of great people with face tattoos, but my whole point is the way that these people think is that they think that way. They just look at something and they're like, you know, what's the thing? Like, he has his, a wedding, his look at his hand. And it's not tan where the wedding ring is. It's just like a, you know, like, oh, so he's took his wedding ring off and he's a fucking cheating bastard. Like, now that's a good way to start. That's showing, not telling. Mm-hmm. But like, they use those kind of elements to just be like, well, we'll just sprinkle that in there. And then it's like, that's good enough. That's character.
Also, let me defend the American South real quick. Every time you want to have a racist piece of shit in a movie, they always make him dip.
Dip in the mouth. Yep. Yeah. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, you know, truck nuts. They got the truck. He pulls up with a truck with some balls on it.
Yeah.
I mean, which is smart, but like, you got to go deeper than that, though. And you can tell that they don't go deeper because all the characters feel like surface level, hollow, like, you know, things that ChatGPT probably did write, you know. So that's what I'm saying. Like, when you take somebody like Paul Schrader, like, just the fact that he constructs his movies through sort of like a problem that he himself is having about whatever he's at in his life, starts with the problem, then he figures out the metaphor. Just doing that is already going to, from the onset, make you create a story with an actual living, breathing person or character in characters already, because you're starting with those things in mind, as opposed to, I got a cool ass concept, like a high concept, you know, because I feel like most writers and most people, they're starting with high concept. They're like, it's fucking, you know, it's Die Hard on a boat. Like, I hate,
in space.
Yeah. I hate the Die Hard ripoffs. And like, I hate that Die Hard ever made money, because to this day, the easiest way right now, listeners, if you want an easy fact, if you want to make a movie, if you want to get a movie made, just do Die Hard in a thing and write it. If you push it hard enough, someone will buy it. It never doesn't work. It always works. The movie will get made. You'll probably make a little money. No one will remember it. It will have no cultural footprint because it's not fucking Die Hard, but maybe you got your foot in the door. But guess what? They're going to want you to make another Die Hard into something afterwards. So you be careful what you wish for. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. That's the app, dude. We got to do the other one, because this is the great. I'm so sorry. I don't want to cut you off, but this is like, this is a great place.
So here's what we'll do. Since we stopped at the lobster, right? This is going to be the end of MAS right now. Go over to Eight Plates, where we'll start from the next movie, which will be A Killing of the Sacred Deer, all the way up into Kinds of Kindness. So, yeah, that's it. It's over. Music. Eight Plates.
All right. Hell yeah.
Hey, yo, yo, yo. Shabba. Shabba. Hey, yo, 1 foot, two foot, three foot, four foot, five foot, six foot, seven foot, eight foot, nine foot, live. Hey, yo, super fat racks in my back pocket. Yeah. Chop hit him in the face, eyes out of both sockets. Ski mask on, Raf Simmons on, black leather jacket with that Mac on. Splash on him, hope the car don't crash on us. Blow the pipe, don't let it play sax on us. I ain't quiet, I'm just mad focused. Everybody in my hood keep their motion fast. Everybody in your hood get their bonus stacks. You niggas crash dummies for that cash money. Skinny nigga shit, bitch, I like fat tummies. Big brick is going through your hood. House shop coming, he got an act up. Came out sweet like his last son. I don't sell packs no more, I write past corners. Fuck with me, you get to live your last moments. Niggas confident enough to put a stack on it. Said you had 10, I said bro on a hump, 3500. Every hood got a hood mascot. Mascot. Every mascot get they ass shot. Not every bad bitch got good pussy. Not every ugly girl got bad box. Yeah. Suicide season smell like dope in the kitchen. A junkie can't cope if you miss it.
coke bags on the floor. Pick it up and lick it. Test is out back door. Hurry up and get it. I don't care about niggas, only women and kids. Niggas act like savages, but y'all spit on citizens. We the ones really on to some niggas mimic. We the ones riding big bodies with the tents 36 inches on the rims. V12 engines, I don't even drive, I just love whips. R.I.P. Slime, real draw rich. 1 for the, 2 for the, 3 for the, 4 for the, 5 for the, 6